A shadow passed across Drury's face. Oh. She pursed her lips and considered the next chip she'd picked up. There's not much to tell, really. My parents sent me to the academy for junior high school, as it was one of the best schools in Sephiro. A friend of mine was also attending there. I placed well in all the classes, joined the fencing team before high school started, joined the student council afterwards. I'm sure Sionji or Miki could tell you the rest of the story. She then bent down on her chip with salsa, looking back at the shorter girl, her green eyes daring Azalin to ask further questions. Yes, they could, Azalin acknowledged, matching Juri's gaze. And they have. But that's their side of the story, not yours. I really don't see how that is any of your business, Azalin. If they choose to tell you what they went through, that's their prerogative, and I will abide by it. But they do not necessarily speak for me. Juri shook her head and let out an exasperated snort. You remind me so much of Tenjo. Oh? Azalin arched one silvery eyebrow in an unconscious mirroring of Juri's usual gesture. That's quite a compliment. She smiled and ate another chip. Juri blinked at Azalin, and then let out a bitter laugh. He would think that, wouldn't you? Yes, I would, Azalin replied stoutly. She's a great person, fun to be around, stands up for her friends, doesn't take guff from anyone, and anybody who can whip the butt of Liza Broadbitch gets a gold star in my book. Yes, she is all that, Juri admitted quietly, directing her gaze at the half-empty salsa bowl. She then arched an eyebrow at the Dantrovian. Does that mean I get a gold star, too? Silver star, Azalin quipped back. You're new here. She tilted her head curiously as the thought occurred to her. While we're on the subject, though... How come you remembered Utena, while everybody else, even Miki and Kyuichi, had forgotten her? To hear them tell it, it looks like your pal the deputy chairman did the big brain wipe over the school after she dropped out after the last big duel. And when he gave you that dinner, fed you some bullshit story about the arena doing it instead. Juri blinked and considered Asselin's question. I'm not quite sure exactly. I remember that the other members of the council and the students in general tended to tune Tenjo out as if she was a fuzzy blank spot in their memories. I remembered, but after a while I decided it was better not to press, as the teachers would get indignant that I'd suggest such a student had ever existed at the academy. She allowed herself an indulgent chuckle. Not that I ever had a problem with them. She tapped her fingers against her chin, thoughtfully. I don't suppose... She shook her head. No, it couldn't be something as simple as that. Juri's voice trailed off as she looked off into the middle distance of the restaurant, over the Dantrovian's shoulder. Couldn't be what? Azalin asked, her curiosity piqued. Well, I still have a picture of her, Juri replied, her right hand briefly drifting up to a point below her collarbone. Quite possibly she didn't even realize she was doing it. I asked Tenjo for it before the final duel. So you do care about her? Juri's mouth opened and then shut again. She directed an accusatory glare at Azalin, who looked smugly back at her. I really don't think it's... Any of your business, yes, yes, I know, we've done this dance before. The Dantrovian grinned and used her tail to flick an unadorned tortilla chip into the air toward Juri. But like I said, my friend's happiness is my business. Therefore, by extension, your happiness is my business. QED. Juri blinked with surprise, taken so off guard that she totally missed the opportunity to try and block the tossed chip. It rebounded off her jacket and landed on the floor, ignored. Are you saying you want to be my friend? Then why? She gestured off in a direction that she hoped led back toward the Institute, and by implication there a prior altercation in the wedge. Azalin munched one of the remaining chips in the basket, unconcerned. Why? Take your pick. Because even in a new world, you're not freaked out by me or Sky. Because not only are you rooming with Dorothy, you're getting her to open up. Because the first day you got here, you slapped broad bitch like she deserved, and that night you spanked her ass so hard that she ran with her tail between her legs. Because you have beautiful green eyes, and Dvil, that hair! I wish I could get my hair to be like that. She grinned and ran her right hand through her stiff, spiky gray hair. Why shouldn't we be friends? Juri's face clouded over again, and she looked into the depths of the flame of the votive candle which sat in the middle of the table. It isn't worth it, Azalin. Yes, it is, she replied. Miki certainly thinks so. Juri's head snapped upward, and she directed a narrowed gaze at the Dantrovian. She looked about ready to respond with some acid diatribe, and then slumped in her chair, looking off to the side. Azalin blinked and wondered for the first time if she'd pushed too far. She pursed her lips, again an unconscious imitation of one of Juri's usual gestures, scooped up the remaining salsa onto one of the few surviving chips, and ate it as she considered another tack. Speaking of whom? Juri looked back at Azalin, her expression still muted, her green eyes slightly dull, even with the candlelight between them. How'd the two of you end up in the fencing team back in Otori, anyway? Juri blinked again, and some light returned to her eyes as she considered Azalin's question. I became interested in the sport as a child. At the academy, I was a member of the fencing team and trained under the former captain. By the time Miki joined, I had taken his place and was leading the club full-time. Oh? What happened to the former captain? Graduated? No, he was a year ahead of me, not two. Juri's voice trailed off, and she laced her hands in front of her chin. He grew ill, but came back briefly during the tournament. He was a duelist as well, not long before the end. Oh, Azalin replied in a soft voice. I'm sorry. Juri didn't know what to say to that. Fortunately for her, she didn't have to reply, for by that time the waiter arrived, bearing drink refills in their two steak fajita platters with associated side dishes and soft warm tortillas. The steak slices sizzled on their iron platters, filling the air between the duelist and the Dantrovian with the scent of freshly cooked marinated beef. Azalin looked at Juri across the table as their meals were served and made a little noise in the back of her throat. She had learned a lot about the taller redhead during the eating of the chips and salsa. She suppressed a mental urge to capitalize the sentence and turn it into the name of a holiday. Perhaps even more than Juri realized she had revealed. But if her measure of the situation was correct, Juri Arisugawa had been hurt, very badly, in the not-very-distant past, and there were some things even she could not help with, not unless Juri was willing to open up further about her past. Azalin Devere Natashkin followed too well the animist path of her people to do any further prying at that particular chink right now. There came a point when trying to help too much was worse than not helping at all, and Azalin knew she couldn't force the issue to that degree. There were some things, Azalin reluctantly admitted, that a person just had to work out for herself. Perhaps here at the Institute, Juri would finally be able to do that, distanced from the weirdness and surreality of Otori Academy. And if she couldn't open up enough to Azalin to be helped, then perhaps there was another. Azalin cleared her throat. Look, Juri, I'll make you a deal. The redhead glanced over at the Dantrovian, curious. And what might that be? You're right. It's not my business to poke into people's pasts like that. Not unless they want me to. Most people don't mind, but then again, you're not most people. She grinned slightly, amused by Juri's perplexed expression. And I respect that. But it is my business to make sure my friends are happy. and I think, despite it all, you feel the same way. Your point being, Ezzelin? My point being, Ezzelin explained, that I'll lay off bugging you about your past if you stop trying to nose in and mess up Utanu and Corwin's friendship. All right? Jury blinked, once again surprised by the Dantrovian's bald proposal. So what you're proposing is a truce? Exactly, Ezzelin smiled. Anything that brings two people closer together, whether it's love or friendship or even if it's a good-natured rivalry, is a good thing in my book. If things develop further with Corwin and Utana, or if they don't, the connections they already have between themselves and others will stand true. Their friendship won't threaten the connections your old crew had within itself. Hell, it might even make them stronger. Look at Utana and Sionji. They used to be enemies. And now? She shrugged. Even I can see that you're developing friendships with the gang here. Give it a chance and let things move at their own pace. Jury considered Asselin's words. Despite the Dantrovian's bluntness and willingness to stick her nose into what she felt was other people's business, she had a frankness and no-nonsense attitude toward life that she found quite refreshing and admirable despite herself. Ezzelin wasn't as naive as Jury had originally believed, and while she didn't herself fully believe in what the shorter girl was expounding, a small part of herself, deep inside, protested against her deeply ingrained rationalist beliefs. Perhaps a miracle wouldn't occur for her, perhaps they never could, not the way Jury wanted them to. But at least here she had a chance to see for herself and try again. This was far from Otori Academy, and the machinations of the deputy chairman, and the familiar chains of expectation and duty she had found herself in. There was no one for her to be here, but whoever she could become. And if nothing else, Jury had to admit, Ezzelin was certainly a worthwhile mental opponent, and that, in its way, was just as worthy as friendship. Ezzelin waited for Jury to think things over, and then offered her hand to the taller woman when the time seemed right. So, agreed? Jury nodded. Agreed. The two of them shook hands, slim pink fingers gripping dark, coppery digits, and then they got down to the serious business of enjoying the provided fajitas. The next morning, Jury apologized to Utana at breakfast, before Corwin arrived. Actually, it was a mutual apology, with Jury apologizing for causing the scene in the first place, and Utana for flying off the handle as much as she had. Devlin Carter proposed a group hug, and was promptly forced to dive out of his chair to avoid being knocked out of it by Amanda. Sometime after that, Corwin came to collect his dragon and say his goodbyes. Caitlin pinged him into the dining hall, and after surveying the offerings in the kitchen, he decided it was safest to stick with the pre-made cereals. So, he said as he sat down in the place saved for him at Utana's side, across from Dorothy, how'd the experiment go? Rather well, I think, Dorothy replied. My recollection is vague, but I believe I experienced a multisensory hallucination during a trance state. It was very curious. I have read that dreams are memory fragments being sorted for long-term storage. That's one theory, Corwin confirmed, nodding. Then it must not be the correct one, Dorothy said, because unless my conscious recall function has been tampered with, you and I have never... Well, look at the time, Corwin said hurriedly. Wish I could hang around, but I've got to get back, and you guys have stuff to do anyway. Gone sailing, said Dorothy, undeterred. Corwin stopped halfway through getting up, gave her a long look, then cracked up as she gave him the faintest hint of a mischievous smile. The laugh rolled around the table, leading others in the dining hall to glance Table 11's way with puzzlement on their faces. A laugh making the rounds of Table 11 was not at all an uncommon occurrence, but kind of odd for finals Monday morning. At any rate, Dorothy went on, I do feel curiously refreshed, and I know Jury was able to sleep better without me, how did you put it, lurking around. Jury looked very faintly embarrassed. Yes, thank you, she said. Quite restful. The redhead seemed very preoccupied this morning, almost lost in thought. Corwin wondered what she was thinking about, then decided it didn't really matter so long as it kept her from giving him those weird, angry looks. Maybe she really had just been irritated about Dorothy's odd night habits. He took his traditional leave after breakfast, with a promise to keep in touch by email with his sister and her roommate, the better to learn how their finals experience was going, and solidify the details of his return during the week when their spring breaks overlapped. When he was gone, the duelists and their friends finished their breakfasts, took a deep collective breath, and hurled themselves into finals week. On Wednesday, Utena entered Minideka to find Sayanji seated behind the register, head on hand, staring into infinity. So transfixed by nothingness was he that he failed to notice her until she cleared her throat theatrically. Shaken from his reverie with a bit of a start, he regarded her blandly. Oh, Tenjo, can I help you? Well, you're a bundle of energy today. I'm bored. No one has been in for hours. I've already restocked all the coolers, the freezer, and the snacks. I've refilled the ice dispenser and cleaned every surface in here. Twice. And I was done with all that over an hour ago. I've never seen it this slow. Perking up a bit, he added, What can I get you? Utena perused the menu for a moment. Quick chicken fries. Right. Sayanji retrieved the bag of fries from the freezer, shook a healthy serving into the fry basket, and lowered them into the hot oil. Returning to the bag to the freezer, he retrieved a frozen chicken patty and dropped it, too, into the churning fryolator. Both he and Utena spent several moments just staring at the bubbling oil, transfixed. Sayanji was the first to pull himself away. So, how's your week going? Huh? Oh, hellish. I feel like a quick chick myself, deep fried. But at least I'm finished with that damn introductory physics final. 3 hours. You do look somewhat crispy, he replied with a smile. Yep. They lapsed again into a companionable silence, staring at the deep fryer. Neither of them moved, save for the few times Sayanji poked at the patty with tongs to make sure it cooked evenly. Eventually, he hauled the basket up to drain. What do you want on it? Oh, mayo, lettuce, and tomato. Sayanji handed over a plate with the sandwich dwarfed by a mound of fries, cooked the way they should be, crisp, and waved Utena off when she reached for her wallet. Forget it. They don't pay me enough to care. You can pay me by keeping me company for a while. Okay, she replied with a shrug and a smile, before taking a bite from her sandwich. This is good. Deep fryers are wonderful inventions. Indeed, but you can't cook everything in them. Well, hot dogs would work, I think. Corn dogs do. Granted, but not much else. From around a fry, Utena suggested, Cheese. What? Cheese. People deep fry cheese. Sayanji blinked. You're right. I wonder. He retrieved a slice of the pasteurized processed American cheese food product that Minideka used on their sandwiches, and ceremoniously dropped it into the deep fryer. Then he raised his eyebrows and said, Whoa. What? Utena asked, craning her neck to try and see down into the fryer from her position in front of the counter. It just vanished. What do you mean? I mean it completely dissolved. Here, come around and see for yourself. Glancing around and seeing no one, Utena walked around to the other side of the counter while Sayanji retrieved another slice. Now watch closely, he said, dropping it into the oil. Sure enough, a split second after hitting the oil, it seemed to lose its consistency. A second later, and it seemed to evaporate before their eyes. Utna blinked. That's so weird. I think it's because this isn't really cheese, Sayonji mused, regarding another slice. It's mostly made from oil. I guess it just kind of returns to what it once was. He tossed the third slice in, and they watched it disintegrate. Hey, Utna said. I wonder what other stuff does. Sayonji and Utna exchanged sidelong glances, slow smiles spreading across their faces. Well, he suggested, let's find out. What followed was an orgy of deep fat frying. First, the other sandwich toppings. Lettuce? Just wilted and turned brown. Not much fun. Tomatoes? Shriveled. Disgusting. Mayo, mustard, ketchup, et al. Just dissolved. Pickles? No noticeable change. Got hot and tasted weird. Various deli meats. Mostly revolting. Bologna fared the best. Breads? Soggy. No one was going to taste that. Once they exhausted the deli counter, they looked around for their next experimental subject. Chips! Utna exclaimed, and bounded around the counter to retrieve several bags of chips from the rack. She returned with samples of several varieties. Tento, chips are already deep-fried, Sayonji observed. So let's find out what happens if you refry them. Sayonji shrugged, took one of the bags, tore it open, and dumped its contents into the fryer. Potato chips? Well, like always, but hot. It just made them greasier and maybe a bit soggy, but they still tasted the same. Corn chips? Not as good. Hot, oily, and soggy, but the same taste. Cheese curls? Icky. Most of the cheese was removed, and they partially dissolved. The chips were proving disappointing, so Sayonji made a new suggestion. Why don't you grab a few of the snacks? Okay. Utna put the remaining chips away and grabbed an armload of snacks. Let's try the pies first. All right, give me a couple. Hostess snack pies. Disappointing. They were hot, but kind of oily and soggy, and tasted a bit odd. I was hoping for something more like the deep-fried pies back at the Otori Commons, Sayonji grumbled. I miss those. Probably it's because these were already cooked once. Oh well. Might as well try these others. Ding-dongs? Odd. The chocolate melted right off, and the cream filling kind of dissolved, but the cake didn't seem to change much. Twinkies? Icky. Again, the cream filling mostly dissolved, leaving hot, oily sponge cake. The rest of the snacks were just variations on the theme, and they really only kept at it because finals week was dragging eternally on, rendering them both punchy enough to find it inordinately entertaining. Eventually, they were out of things to try. They scanned the room fruitlessly and were starting to lose the buzz when Utna perked up. Ice.
Ice?
Ice. What happens if you put an ice cube in there? Sayonji shrugged. Only one way to find out. Utna retrieved an ice cube from the soda fountain and plopped it into the fryer. For a split second, nothing happened. Then the oil erupted into a mass of bubbles as the ice quickly transformed to liquid and then to steam.
Wow, Sayonji observed.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Want to try some more?
Sure.
This time, Utna filled a small cup full of ice and emptied it into the fryer. There was a slightly longer pause than the last time, followed by a somewhat larger eruption.
I've got an idea, Sayonji said with a gleam in his eye. He removed one of the baskets from the fryolator and carried it over to the fountain, where he completely filled it with ice.
He paused before placing the basket in the oil and looked at Utna, who grinned and nodded. Smiling himself, he lowered the basket into the oil. Nothing happened.
He and Utena exchanged curious looks, then leaned over to look down into the oil. They could see the last of the ice melting away, and the odd rippling distortions in the oil caused by the mixing of the cold water and hot oil. Other than that, nothing. Something was nagging at the back of Utena's mind, something important, something from physics. Specific heat! She shot a look at Sayanji and saw that he'd come to a similar realization. Then they ran in opposite directions. And not a moment too soon, as the fryolator erupted in a shower of oil so high that it coated the inside of the vent hood, as well as the grill, the toaster, the counter, the floor, and everything else within a several-foot radius of the fryer. In the aftermath of the eruption, the relative silence was deafening. Utena and Sayanji exchanged wide-eyed, stunned looks. Oil was dripping from the vent hood onto the counters, and from the counters onto the floor. The level of oil in the fryolator was down at least an inch. "Well," Utena started, then trailed off. "Yes, well, I didn't quite expect that." "No, I didn't either." "Specific heat," Sayanji mused. "Yep," said Utena. "So the ice melted, all that water sank to the bottom, and it basically flashed to steam all at once." "It seems that way," she said, gesturing at the mess. Sayanji surveyed the damage. "Good thing we moved." "Yeah." Long pause. "Perhaps you'd be so good as to help me clean this up before I get fired?" he asked with a grin. Utena laughed. "Sure." Sayanji passed Utena a handful of rags, then grabbed the jug of fry oil to bring the fryolator back to the correct level. That accomplished, he joined Utena on rag duty. It was almost impossible to soak up the oil completely, so they ended up basically oil polishing everything. The metal countertop gleamed like it had been waxed and buffed. It took 30 minutes of frantic effort and a mound of rags, but they managed to remove all of the obvious traces of their deed. The frantic pace of the cleanup effort drained away what little remained of the manic energy that had come upon them during the experiment. Once finished with it, they slumped to the floor, side by side with their backs against the front of the counter, elbows on knees, exhausted. "That," said Sayanji, "was incredibly dumb. I cannot believe we did that." "I can," Utena replied. "I've gotten 4 hours of sleep so far this week." "There is that," Sayanji admitted. They sat for a few moments more, gathering enough energy to return to their lives. Sayanji knew he shouldn't be sitting here. If his manager came in, he'd catch hell for it, but he just couldn't muster enough strength to stand. Finally, Utena hauled herself to her feet, then reached down a hand to help him up, observing, "Blah. Like it or not, I need to get back to studying." "Hmm," said Sayanji, nodding. "And I've still got an hour here before my Outer Rim Lit final." "Well, good luck," said Utena. "You too. Oh, Tendro?" "Yes? Next time I'm about to do something that stupid, stop me." "But it seemed like a good idea at the time," Utena protested with a laugh. "Yeah, I guess it did at that," Sayanji chuckled at the memory. Just then his manager entered Minideka via the back door to see how things were going. She quickly scanned the coolers, snacks, chips, and finally the cooking area. "Well, very nice. You've really cleaned things up. Keep up the good work." Sayanji twitched, fighting to keep a straight face. "Sure, no problem." He and Utena barely managed to wait until the manager was out of earshot before dissolving in gales of laughter. C-term ended for the officers of the Institute Duelist Society at 3:30 on Friday afternoon, with the close of the Galactic History 203 final exam. Wearily, Utena, Kate, Sayanji, and Miki dragged themselves into the wedge and slumped down in the big booth next to Minideka's entrance, where the others had already gathered. Without exception, they were all too tired to do anything but sit there in a sprawled group, occasionally moaning. Only Dorothy Wainwright seemed not to have been enervated by the week's experiences, and she wasn't completely untouched by the pressure herself. She was just better at concealing it.
"I think I totally blew question 3, Utena observed after a few moments.
"Which one was that?" Miki wondered.
"Which founding member of the Wedge Defense Force was the captain of the Gravity Ball team which won the Galactic Cup in 2104?
That was my mom," Caitlin exclaimed.
"Morgan's M-Deck Marauders won the Galactic Cup 21 times between 2020 and 2208, Dorothy said, a hint of weariness creeping into her recitation. "Before the International Gravity Ball Federation declared detainism an illegal performance-enhancing condition and barred 7 members of the team, including its captain, from competition."
Kate nodded.
Mom's still a bit pissed about that.
"Oh," said Utena. "Well, what do you know? I guess I did get it right."
"We should celebrate," said Azalin listlessly. Finals week had sapped even her famous energy.
"Yay," replied Amanda Dessler with a desultory twirl of one index finger in the air.
"There. Satisfied?"
"No," Azalin replied with a tired pout. "By celebrate, I meant eat."
"I'm for that," Moose rumbled. "But Deka doesn't serve for another 2 hours, and I don't want to get up."
"We could order pizza," Devlin suggested. He mimed the use of a telephone and said,
"Hello! Hello, Bill! Finals are over, what? Send sustenance to the place of rest and be quick about it, my good man. Our lives are in your hands."
That got a chuckle out of the group, and then they lapsed back into inactivity again. Not much celebrating got done that night. Everyone was just too tired. They did finally get a bit of a second wind, enough to order pizza, then retired to their rooms to talk, read, and generally unwind from the ringer of final exams. Some places on campus were rocked by parties, but for the duelists and their friends, bedtime came early. Caitlin had cause to be very happy that Janice Barlow ran a quiet floor. Saturday was bright, clear, and unseasonably warm. It looked like winter's promise of abating early was coming true. The snow was already almost gone, lingering only in the dark, rock-speckled clumps pushed into the deepest corners of parking lots and street corners by the snowplows. Kate rose at 11, feeling refreshed and energized. She and Utena went down to the bathroom together and talked through the curtains of their adjacent shower stalls about the possibility of their semi-planned trip to Toronto.
"You sure you're up to a trip that long?" Utena wondered. "You haven't had much practice. Haven't had any in the real world."
"Sure, no problem, Kate replied. "I've had some practice," she added indignantly. "I learned to drive in New Avalon last summer. I just tested in VR. The only tricky part will be getting through Niagara. It'll be your job to keep us from getting lost."
"Oh, I see," said Utena, amused. "Think we should take anyone else with us? If anybody else is even around."
"Well, I'll pretty much have to take Dorothy. Unless I could get Corwin to assign somebody else as her guardian while I'm out of town, said Kate.
She paused to soap and rinse her face, then went on,
"Besides, it'll do her good to see more of the world."
Utena replied.
"As for the others, I guess we can ask. Figure we could get maybe one more into your average rental car. First come, first served?"
Works for me, Kate replied.
They talked it over for the rest of their time in the shower, then returned to their room with a slightly better realized but still rather freeform plan. Basically, it involved finding a way to the airport. If nothing else offered, it was a nice enough day to walk. Renting a car, ordinarily a challenge for someone Kate's age, but with her connections, she thought she could swing it. And then, well, then driving to Toronto. While Uchina packed their clothes, Kate went online and rustled up a reservation at one of the mid-range hotels downtown, making sure to get a room on a nice high floor. A bit of lunch, a quick sweep of the group for a fourth, and they would be off. In front of Sanford Riley Hall, Amanda Dessler slung her field pack over the rear fender of her motorcycle, secured it, and picked up her helmet, then turned to Devlin Carter. "Well, Earthman," she began. Then she trailed off and stood there looking at him for a moment. "Walt," he replied, looking slightly nervous. "Come with me," said Amanda suddenly.
"What?"
Devlin repeated, more forcefully this time.
"Come with me," said Amanda again. "You've nowhere else to go, correct? No family gathering, no mysterious errands to the far corners of this miserable planet. Come with me to Gamelon. I..."
She paused, a faint pink blush appearing below the pale blue of her cheeks.
"I wish to introduce you to my father," she went on, "and my brother."
"Your brother," Devlin said skeptically. "Oh yes, I'm sure he'd be thrilled to make my acquaintance." Amanda rolled her eyes slightly.
"Garen will like you," she insisted. "And father... well, father will accept you, which is about as well as an Earthman can do with him. You've nothing to worry about."
Well, look, Amanda, that's nice and all, what? But I really don't know that..."
"Devlin," she said, her voice serious. "Please."
He trailed off, looking back at her with equal frankness in his own eyes, and then cracked a wry smile.
"Well," he said, "when you put it that way."
From the window of Riley 212, Azalin watched Devlin climb onto the back of Amanda's motorcycle behind her, grip her around the waist, and hold on as she fired up the machine and they roared off around the side of the dorm and out of sight. She smiled and giggled slightly.
"What?" asked Miki Kaworu sleepily from her bed.
"Nothing much," she replied. "Just another step taken on someone else's road." At his continued quizzical look, she elaborated, "Amanda just took Devlin with her."
"Oh," Miki replied with a drowsy smile.
"Good."